Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's Mesa City Council study session for Thursday, September 20, what is it today? 22nd, 2011. I would like to excuse Councilmember Richens, who is out of town, and Councilmember Higgins, I guess, is just running a little late, so we'll get going. First item on the agenda is to review the agenda for next Monday's regular council meeting. So on page 2, items 3A through 3D. Items 3E through 4A. 4B through 4F. 4G through 4J. 4K through 6A, Mr. Wesley?
Yes, Mayor, we recognized last night as we were reviewing again the ordinance for K6A, that's Z1122, that there's an incorrect reference to the zoning code in the heading of that, so we're going to have to reintroduce that, so we need to pull this from next Monday's agenda, and we'll have it on the 3rd for reintroduction.
Okay, so that'll be on October 3rd agenda. So 6A is removed, and will be show up again on October 3rd. Okay. And 6B through 7A. Okay.
So, Mayor, 4L, that one will go to October 3rd.
I'm sorry.
You have October. I'm sorry, I missed.
What did we miss?
4L.
I have all the way down to K.
Got taken care of then.
Oh, sorry.
We brought an old one. She's I'm sorry.
Okay.
You got to get up to date on your technology.
I was thinking, what in the hell is she talking about?
Parchment and quill pens.
Oh, yeah.
We're good.
That it did. Okay. All right. Next item is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the renewal of property, excess liability, and aviation insurance coverage.
This is Barry Hegrenis, our claims representative, and we also have someone here from the insurance, our insurance broker, to answer any questions you might have. We are about to go out to bid for our annual insurance for the city of Mesa. It includes property insurance, liability insurance, and insurance for the Falcon Field Airport. And we come each year and let you know, generally answer questions about the insurance market, and also tell you what we are recommending in terms of policy limits and self-insured retention limits. So, as I said, we're about to go out, so we're coming to you today to make a recommendation, but certainly seek any recommendations you may have, and if you want to either change the self-insured retention limit or the policy limit, now would be the time before we go out to the market. So our first type of insurance is our excess liability insurance. And again, this covers any personal injury liability claims that are made against the city of Mesa. And we have provided you with a chart showing the prior years and where the insurance is and what type of insurance we've purchased. For the past 2 years, we have been self-insured at $3 million per occurrence, which means that each claim that is filed against the city of Mesa, we are responsible or self-insured for the first $3 million of that claim. Beyond that, we have excess liability insurance, which covers the city of Mesa up to a total of $38 million per claim. If a claim happened to go above $38 million, again, the city of Mesa would be responsible for covering that excess amount. We've never even come close to that amount, but certainly it could be a possibility. Our insurance broker is recommending that we stay at $3 million per occurrence for our self-insured retention, but that we seek different policy limits. As you can see by the information we provided, Mesa is a little bit towards the lower end of other Valley cities in terms of our policy limits. So what we are recommending is that we seek bids at $3 million SIR, or self-insured retention, and then seek bids for a $35 million policy limit and a $45 million policy limit. We will obviously bring those bids to you after we receive them, and then the council can decide, depending on the cost of $35 million versus $45 million, we can decide what's in the best interest for Mesa for the coming year. Do you have any questions regarding the excess liability insurance or the history on what we have paid for the city of Mesa for insurance?
Any questions?
Okay. Okay, then we'll talk about the property insurance. We are currently, we estimate we have about $900 million in assets for the city of Mesa, so that is what we are insuring. We currently have insurance limits of $300 million per occurrence that we would be reimbursed. We have a $50,000 deductible per occurrence on those claims. Again, we have given you the history of how much we have paid in property insurance over the years, and what we are recommending today is that when we go back out to bid, we seek policy limits of $300 million per occurrence, but we change the deductible, and we seek bids at $50,000 deductible and $100,000 deductible. And again, just see where the market is, and then we'll make a cost-benefit analysis at that time. Okay, then moving on to the airport liability insurance. We have airport liability separate because it is specifically excluded in the excess liability coverage. So we have to get separate coverage for Falcon Field. This type of insurance has been very consistent over the years, and we actually have a zero deductible, which means every claim that comes in at the airport immediately goes to the carrier. And we've done that because we have tried changing and becoming a little self-insured at the airport, and really the cost is negligible. So we don't have any savings from doing that. So we start off with a zero self-insured, and then we have policy limits for liability insurance of $50 million. And then when you get to aircraft and air and liability insurance, which is for our operating our aircraft, such as the PD helicopters, we have the $25,000 deductible if it's in motion and $1,000 if it's not in motion. And again, a $50 million policy limit per occurrence. So we're recommending that we stay with those policy limits. They've worked very well for the city of Mesa in the past. Do you have any questions?
Any questions?
Okay, we should bring this back sometime by November.
Hold it. Councilmember Fenter.
I'm sorry, I didn't know if you were going to move on to the next stage. You mentioned we have our broker here with us. I was wondering if it's okay with the mayor maybe to have that person take a minute to kind of tell us who they are, where they're from, history, experience, since they're going to be out negotiating for us.
Absolutely.
Good morning. I'm Joy Boswell, and I'm with Willis Insurance. There's the mic. Shall I sit down?
Sure. Go ahead.
I'm not very tall. Maybe I shouldn't.
It's a joy to have you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm with Willis Insurance. I've been with them for over 20 years. We've been associated with Mesa for just a year now. We're very happy to be associated with Mesa, and I think we bring some new insights into your insurance program. I'd like to speak just a minute about the insurance marketplace and let you know kind of like how the pricing is shaping up for this year. Basically, the insurance marketplace has been fairly stable, and it's a little bit like the stock market. It's kind of irrational. There are years when we don't know why it's high, we don't know why it's low. But lately, it's been returning to more of a practical underwriting basis. So accounts that have losses, their premiums have been going up based upon their own loss experiences. Accounts that don't, they've seen very stable, flat renewal premiums. So based upon that, we are not anticipating too many surprises this year, but we will go out in the marketplace and see what we can do for you. Anybody have any other questions?
Are we affected, is our type of insurance, specifically property and stuff, affected by the recent natural disasters such as Irene and those types of things? Is that a completely separate risk pool that doesn't really affect our type of commercial insurance?
Well, it will next year. This year, because your policy comes up in November, those losses will not have had a chance to impact the property marketplace. Those reinsurance treaties come up 1-1. So all of those losses will impact the rates that the reinsurers are willing to offer to the insurance companies for 2012. But you're okay for this year. Last year wasn't too bad of a storm year, but it all filters up to the top. Those losses reach the people that provide the capital to the insurance market, and there's some pretty big storms this year. So
yeah, maybe I think most people think their insurance rates are determined by their individual history without realizing that when they have a hurricane on the East Coast, we end up paying for it.
Slightly.
Yeah. Well, because the risk is spread throughout the country and even the world. So it's diluted pretty good by the time it gets to us.
Diluted by the time it reaches you. And with your timing, it'll be pretty good for this year.
Okay. Good. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. The next item is to hear a presentation and discuss the proposed agreements for the Chicago Cubs spring training facility. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. We are today, Mr. Rigby has a presentation to continue to provide some further details on the agreements that we are concluding with the Cubs. We anticipate that early next week we will be able to have all of the agreements available for public review, and then anticipating that we'll have this on the Council agenda for October 3rd. Just a slight
All agreements on October 3rd?
Yes, all agreements. So all the agreements related to the development, as well as you noticed, we anticipate we'll also have the construction manager at risk contract with Hunt Construction will also be available.
We've had the development agreement out there for a couple weeks now, but some of these other ones have not been out there, and that would, let's look and see when we have that, because that could give us less than a week of having it open. So let's just keep that in mind, and we can talk about that. Okay. So whether it's some of them, we may want to wait a little while, but we'll try and get them on the 3rd.
Okay.
Good morning, Mayor, members of the Council. Back again to talk about the Cubs. Last time we were talking about the development agreement. Today we'll talk about the facilities use agreement, or sometimes we'll call it the FOA. And then the option agreement, which deals with the commercial entities. This is the site. Basically, it's the existing Riverview Golf Course, wastewater treatment plant, Riverview Park, and the softball complex. The FUA will mostly cover the existing, where you see the existing golf course. The option will somewhat overlap into just east of the Riverview Drive. As we showed you last week, this is a conceptual site plan of the different components of the city-owned and constructed facilities. The one difference you'll see is we've started to outline the option areas, and we'll talk about that in the coming moments here. Again, the facilities use is really the lifeblood of this agreement. The development agreement is kind of the overarching agreement, but the facilities use will really govern the day-to-day operation, maintenance, capital improvements, those type of projects. In terms in the deal. The option agreement ties to the Wrigleyville, the commercial development that will occur adjacent to this city-owned facility. Again, the facilities use agreement, the key thing is this is the lease and the exclusive right for the Cubs to lease the stadium and the team facilities, which is the training facility, much like Fitch today. The city fields, now again, all of these improvements are city-owned, but for the term of art in the deal, the city fields are the four baseball fields just to the west of where the team facilities will be. City fields during spring training season, the Cubs will have the right to use that. Outside of that, we have the right to program and use that. If the Cubs come to us and offer and request to use those fields, if that's available and it's not conflicting with our schedule, they can use that. Again, the other part of it is a parking commitment the city has made that everything west of Riverview Drive is to park at least 2,500 cars or vehicles in order to service the stadium needs. Again, the use and scheduling, the Cubs during spring training and throughout the use of the year have exclusive control of the stadium and their team facilities. The one thing is we've, in this agreement, talked about 10 city events that we can utilize the stadium. The revenues during stadium uses by the Cubs, they have the exclusive right to control all the revenue that generates from tickets, concessions, etc. City fields, we collect those when we use those. If they use those for their uses, they get to collect the revenue created by that. Parking, for the 2,500 parking spaces west of Riverview, they have exclusive control. If there is additional parking that we provide, say east of Riverview, say up by the softball fields, we've agreed to with the Cubs, we've agreed to that, that we'll share that 50-50, or they will share that with us, 50-50 net. Again, Citi Fields, we talked about that. This is only for the Cubs. We don't allow, we won't allow another MLB team to use that facility. And then we will be responsible for the operation maintenance of the Citi Fields.
Scott, you don't mention in here, though, the maintenance obligations on the stadium and the team facilities.
Mayor, the operation maintenance of the stadium and team facilities are Cubs' responsibilities,
okay,
which is significantly different than what you see out there today with our current system.
Yeah, and I think that's important because those go hand in hand, and when we talk about revenue stream and things like that, one of the questions we got during the campaign was why would we be allowing the Cubs to keep revenues, and we made it very clear that the trade-off was the Cubs are taking all responsibility for the costs associated with maintaining the stadium and operating the stadium, and therefore that was something we were willing to give up the revenue potential because we were also giving up the responsibility and the risk and the downside on the operations.
Correct. I mean, okay, Today it's a significant burden for us, not only for spring training, but we have to keep Fitch perfect shape for the Cubs for virtually year-round. This aspect,
and Holcomb also.
Yeah, and Holcomb, correct.
Okay.
We talked about public parking, naming rights. Obviously, the Cubs have the exclusive right to name that. Now, the critical thing is we won't allow them to use another city or another use on that facility. It must say Mesa. The stadium apron, which you can think out front of like the head gate, is there'll be a kind of a large plaza area, and we'll show you here in an example coming up that we'll likely strike a license agreement for them to utilize that space. Thinking of a fan fest type of activity with pop-up tents, you know, those type of things, they can use that plaza area during spring training. We'll enter into a license for that with them. If they don't choose not to do that, we can go out and if somebody else wants to license that area from us, they can do that also. The term of the agreement is 50 years. Rent, and this is a key thing we want to take a moment on, is determined on fair market value of the stadium site. Again, the stadium site is just the area around the stadium, not the 120 acres. Rent payments are due the first of February. And then how we decided the fair market value, we arrived at $9, is the Cubs went out and did their own independent appraisal, and we did our own independent appraisal, came together looking at the similar properties and their comps, and between those similar comps, we arrived at the average of those.
When you said
comps,
they did an appraisal, we hired an appraiser and they hired an appraiser.
Correct.
We didn't do the appraisal. We contracted and they hired an outside appraiser, and those two came up with their own appraisals. And then,
and looking at the two, obviously there's a disagreement between those two appraisals. We took similar comps between the two appraisals. Between those two appraisals and their similar comps, we came up with the average price, which is
so the $9 is what we consider to be a fair market value at this time.
Correct.
All right. And that rent, basically, I mean, in the original MOU, the Cubs were required to provide the property for the stadium because it was anticipated that that would be, that would, they'd have to buy land. Well, since it's a city land, that requirement did not change. They still have to compensate the city, and this is how we came to that. Is that accurate?
Correct.
Okay. Councilmember Fenter.
And just to clarify, that's $9 per square foot for
Correct.
Folks that might be watching and not realize it's not $9, but per square foot for the area.
You are correct, Councilmember. $9 per square foot. Spring training activity.
Square foot is 12 inches by 12 inches. That means there's a lot of square footage in that stadium site.
Correct. And then again, the whole purpose of this is to have the Cubs use this as their West Coast headquarters. And in the FUA, we'll also talk about, and the DA also talks about, the economic development that they're bringing to the city, whether through their player personnel or for their staff. The other benefits to the city for this project is, and I'm not going to read through all of these, but I'll just kind of highlight, a city suite will have exclusive right of that city suite and all stadium events. City signage, there'll be a group area. I mean, I think most of you have been to different events out at the ballpark during spring training, whether it's through economic development, business to baseball, or other things. We'll have that ability to utilize that. City stadium events, we'll have the opportunity to use that for 5 events per year, and then additional 5, working with the schedule with the Cubs. Those can be revenue generating. Reserve stadium parking, public service announcements, stadium event programs. We will allow the Cubs to use our logo. And so that's basically the facility use agreement in a nutshell. If we move to the option agreement, which is probably generated a lot of interest, is because the commercial developments around this, the option agreement stipulates how we will deal with the license, leasing, or selling of city-owned property. And right now we've identified 2 areas that are open for development. The West Option property, and it's about 3 acres west of Riverview Drive. And we had to limit that to 3 acres just because of the commitment we've had with the Cubs to provide 2,500 parking spaces. And then the east side option, which is on the east side of the Riverview Drive, adjacent to the existing lake, is that will not be available until the federal encumbrance on that property is listed.
Why don't you explain the federal encumbrance pretty real quickly?
Sure. Several years ago, and this goes back to probably a couple decades ago, in order to help that park develop, we received some federal grants. And tied to those federal grants are a restriction on the property that you can only use it for certain uses. If we want to move ahead and do commercial uses, we need to remove that encumbrance replace that with another piece of property somewhere else in the city of a like or similar type of public park usage. So I think Natalie Lewis in the city manager's department is heading that effort up to find another property in the city to move that encumbrance to that. So that, again, that east property will not be available until that federal encumbrance.
And we've had presentations on staff has already identified several sites, so we don't anticipate that that's an issue. It's
correct.
Just the time to go through the process and the paperwork with the federal government to.
It takes time with the federal government.
Yeah. Okay.
Vis-a-vis Air Force Research
Lab. This is a representation of where, kind of the area where we see the west property option, and it's really we want to focus development along that Paseo. I think I've heard different names of that Paseo, whether it's Mesa's Magnificent Mile or different things. Is to have that development really feel of an urban density to tie people all the way over from the park all the way over to the stadium. And then just on the east side with the renovation of the lake is to utilizing some of that lakefront to potentially use it for restaurants or other activities. Just for representation, here is an idea of how commercial development could build out on the site. These are probably a combination of food and beverage type of amenities, maybe some hospitality. You'll see some of the ideas of maybe restaurants boarding up to the boardwalks along the lake. And again, as we talked about that stadium apron, just south of the stadium would be pop-up tents, those type of activities. Think of a fan fest. That could extend all the way up that Paseo, even out onto the boardwalk, where, say, let's say the restaurants want to take advantage of the boardwalk and put some tables and chairs out. We would license that out to have that amenity. But you begin to see how the stadium on one end and the park, which I think the mayor's been very adamant about this, is a signature part, are the bookends, or if you think of a commercial development, the anchors of development. Here again is an artist's rendition of how we could see the commercial development tying with the park and kind of that promenade or that paseo. This is looking east toward the lake, and over across Dobson would be the Riverview development. You'll see commercial development and one of the things you'll see in the next coming weeks is the city will be processing a zoning application to rezone this, to strip off the old wave yard stipulations, and to put in place the proper zoning to allow this type of development to here. And we'll push for urban densities up in the Paseo area. We're thinking anywhere between 3 and 6 stories if the development demands that. We want to push the density to really concentrate the uses in that area. So just some of the basic terms of the option. The option agreement, the West Option Agreement, begins on the completion or the opening of the stadium. The east side, again, as we said, will only become available once the federal encumbrance. And the option term length is 18 months. So the Cubs have to decide, or their entity, MDH, has to decide if they want to utilize that property or not. Before they can utilize that, they come through the city process to get site plan approval for the whole area. They'd use some CC&Rs to mandate how development will occur, who has responsibilities for O&M and maintenance, shared covered areas or common areas. And then the key thing we want to make sure is any tenant that has a lease on the site has access to the signage. Option price, $25,000 for the west side, $25,000 for the east side. If they use all the property, which is a success, then that cost of that option goes into the final purchase. Again, the purchase price is $9 per square foot or per 12 inches squared. And the city is selling it as is, and we have no obligation to do remediation. I think one of the key things that was discussed way back when, the idea of this whole Cubs agreement, was the need to see something go in immediately around or adjacent or in the stadium. So one of the requirements to initiate this option is the MDH, which is kind of the development arm for the Cubs, have a requirement to complete either 10,000 square feet, or they can construct, for lack of a better term, a Captain Morgan's or similar type of restaurant if you've been to Wrigleyville.
And most people who have not been to Chicago have no idea what you're talking about, so explain a little bit what that is.
Captain Morgan's is a restaurant. I guess the best way to term it is, if you've been to Chase Field, there is...
TGI Fridays.
It's the same type of concept. Is there to be a restaurant either attached or within the stadium that could be utilized both game day and off game day for restaurants or events type of activities. We want to see that type of same commercial activity start day one when that stadium opens.
And they have a similar thing that at Wrigley Field that is a Captain Morgan's. Yeah. And it's
the pictures along the bottom kind of show some pictures of how that works. Captain Morgan's, you can come in off from the street or in from the stadium at Wrigleyville. It's a quite a festive area. It's about 8,000 square feet, both inside and outside. It's a popular place for gathering before and after events.
Built right into the right field side of Wrigley Field.
Now, we'll be in the construction of the stadium, or the $84 million, we'll probably build a shell for that, and then the MDH or whoever will build or use that will finish out the shell for their own personal uses. Now, if MDH fails to do either one of those, 10,000 square feet or the Captain Morgan's, and they want to continue to have access to option property, they must pay a cure penalty, which is the $250,000. If they do that, then the option will continue for an additional 18 months. So the goal is, again, to have something kicking off day one. And then the idea is to have a rolling commercial development. So let's say they're successful with that initial option. They produce 10,000 square feet of commercial space, or they do the Captain Morgan's. Then that can roll into the next option length of time that they can continue to do further development. And they have to complete at least 10,000 square feet in each of those succeeding tiers. If they do that, then they can move on to the next tier. If they fail to move forward, whether they choose to not to continue to commercial develop, or they fail to complete construction or start construction, then that option will terminate. And we can move on to somebody else. And again, some of the things that I just mentioned, if they fail to satisfy the construction deadlines.
Okay, Vice Mayor?
What safety valve is built in on the price of the land? If they purchase that land, obviously we don't want them land banking this thing. They're going to purchase it. That purchase price is $9 a square foot. If we decide that they failed in their option and we want to repurchase that, are we going to be getting new assessments on it and paying more, or are we paying the $9 a square foot to get it back?
If MDH is out and they fail to perform and the option terminates, then we can go back out and select a second developer, find other developers.
But I think the specific question...
The repurchase price is the same price as what they purchased.
That's what I was getting at.
There's two points here.
You were going on to the next
one.
The repurchase price is whatever the Cubs paid for it. We have the right
to
buy
it
back.
We won't pay a premium,
at the same price that the Cubs paid for it. If the Cubs, for whatever reason, failed to keep the option active, they don't get the benefit of the $9 a foot.
That's correct.
That once the option goes stale or terminates, then it resets as
then
to
we,
whatever the
then
market
we,
value
then we
is. Then
we determine new fair market value. After
yeah, that. We can go out and figure
the $9 square foot is determined today as is, as the property is, without the, any development, without any infrastructure. So that's, you know, when.
Based on the two assessments?
Correct. Both assessments evaluated the property as it sits today without the infrastructure. Well, with the infrastructure that's in the streets today, but without any improvements, without the stadium there, without all those there. So it's as it sits today. So that's how that was determined. Now, as we move forward, that will continue to be the value for the Cubs as an incentive to get development to take place and bring development in. If the Cubs fail to perform the development over the stated periods of time, and that option terminates, then the city it has no obligation to sell the land to the Cubs in the future. Certainly, we keep reminding them if the option terminates, they can continue to come back and negotiate the city. We'll be negotiating then another fair market value price. Most likely at this time, it will include the infrastructure and the improvements the city's put in.
Okay, thank you.
And they'll be competing with the any other developers that might
yes.
want to come in. They'll just be like any other developer who comes in. And at that point in time, since they failed in the first one, my guess is that we would be less inclined to give them a second shot.
Yeah, I don't think we'd be giving them an option. We would certainly be willing to negotiate a price for the sale of land. So,
but it would be on much different terms
Absolutely.
Than what we have now because they'd already failed. So we'd probably
Absolutely.
Be looking for another developer
Correct.
To come in at that point in time. But we have our options. We still control
Absolutely.
The land. If development doesn't happen, we control the land.
Absolutely.
Either way, we can buy it back from the Cubs, or we can terminate the option and put it out to the open market on for any other developer to come in. Is that
Correct.
Accurate?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. And essentially, that's the two agreements. I think we'll be wrapping those up in the next couple of days if things go well, and we'll be back to council when the time is decided.
Okay. I've just been told, Councilmember Higgins, are you on the phone? No? I was told she was, so I guess she's not. Okay. Any other questions?
No. Oh, Mayor, I'm here. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry I woke you up. We apologize. We didn't mean to have a meeting in the middle of your nap time, but that's okay.
What happened?
All right. Do you have any questions at all?
No, I'm fine. Thanks, Mayor.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Reports on meetings or conferences attended. Do you have any? Councilmember Glover.
I was recently appointed to the Mesa Can Board Community Action Network, and I attended their board retreat at the New Leaf building on University. And I just wanted to give them a shout-out and thank them for the hard work that they do for our community and the residents of Mesa for helping them with their resources and other services that they provide. And I attended a Arizona Museum for Youth board meeting on Saturday, and I want to give a special shout-out to Sunny O'Rourke, the executive director, for the hard work that she and her staff does. And we're looking forward to the Warner Brothers exhibit that's coming up starting next week.
Okay. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. Yesterday I attended a meeting of the Valley Metro Rail Board, and it was a positive meeting in several respects. The system is working very well. Ridership is up significantly. Fare recovery is doing very well over what was budgeted, so that's a positive for the system. And perhaps most importantly, the discussions are going very well between the Valley Metro Rail and the Regional Public Transit Authority, RPTA, on moving forward to have a single executive director for both entities. I'm part of a working group representing Metro Rail Board on that, and we've had some very positive discussions. We have outside counsel for that working group. There are no major legal impediments to make that happen, and so our goal is to try to have this action completed by both boards before the end of the year. I think it will be a very positive move for regional transportation and regional governance issues. And so it was a positive meeting. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Councilman Pinter.
Thanks. Last Thursday, we had the kickoff of the Building Strong Neighborhoods in District 2. It's in the Taylor Junior High area. The room was filled with residents. I think I heard probably the most well-attended kickoff that they've had, probably throughout the city. And so it really sent a message to me, and I've seen as a council member over the last few years, of how dedicated those folks are in that area. And it's a great example for other neighborhoods in the area, in the city, to be able to say, hey, you know, here's an opportunity for the city to partner with you so you can make your neighborhoods better. And just really appreciate the staff and everyone that came out that evening and supported the effort. And also on Saturday, we had LDS youth from the Boulder Creek stake that came into District 2. That's more of an area. They came from the area of Power and Guadalupe and came in and did service projects, hundreds of youth. And so really appreciate the effort and the support that we've been receiving in District 2.
That's great. Thank you. Vice Mayor.
To bounce off that, when I attended the luncheon, actually Chris Brady's wife was the one who organized those youth. She also had folks from Arizona State University. Some of the houses out at ASU were volunteering, and they did a project in District 6, which will be your district area as I looked at the map probably by the end of the year. So they did a fantastic job of projects, park cleanups, yard cleanups, spray-painted addresses on the front street. Alex, you know how important that is. Also, Mayor, on your behalf, I attended the Gilbert Constitution Week celebration. The Mayor Lewis and I had 2 minutes to speak up on stage, and I had never heard such enthusiasm for two political figures walking out on stage to speak. And then I realized David Archuleta was standing behind us, so it really wasn't about us. That was really a bummer moment.
Well, for me. I've heard that kind of excitement, but usually it's when I'm walking off the stage.
Yeah, this was a little different. It was walking on. Hey, we're doing pretty good. And there he was standing right behind us. So much for that. It was a fantastic event. The Constitution Week's been going on there since for 10 years in celebration of not only the signing of the Constitution, which happened on that day, but also in remembrance of 9/11. So they did a fantastic job down there.
Great. Good. Thank you so very much for covering. Anything else? Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, today at noon, Mayor's Smith's Twitter Town Hall, and that will be live on Mesa Channel 11. And then this Saturday, we have a District 4 pancake breakfast at Station 1 with Councilmember Glover. And there will be our council meeting. We have a council meeting on Monday. That will be preceded by an Economic Development Committee meeting at 3:15.
And just a little bit more on that Twitter Town Hall. Appreciate all the work the staff has put into that. Channel 11 and my chief of staff, Kathy McDonald, Melissa Randazzo, and everyone. Anyone can ask a question as long as you do it through Twitter. And for those of you who are tweeps, know how to do it, you can hashtag AskSmith, A-S-K-S-M-I-T-H. And your question will be picked up by the staff, who will then feed them to me live, real time, and we'll answer the questions the best we can. And that will be the part that's being broadcast on Channel 11 and simulcast on online, live streamed live, or is it live streamed?
Uh-huh.
I guess it's streamed live. Whatever it is, it'll be both places. So this is once again the idea is to make use of social media in a good way, and we already have some questions that have come in and are being lined up to ask. So that's hashtag ASKSMITH, AskSmith. Okay? Thank you very much. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak from the public?
No requests, Mayor.
All right. No further business. I have a motion to adjourn from the Vice Mayor, Second Councilmember Cavanaugh.
No, we do? No, we don't. I didn't vote for that.
Oh, hello. Maybe if I turned my agenda over like I did before I started.
I vote no.
Okay. We have a motion to Vice Mayor amended his motion to, yes, you did, to enter into executive session. We have a second from Councilmember Cavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I object.
You can't. You made the motion. We'll We'll now move into executive session. Thank you.